You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Richard Eggers from Des Moines, Iowa. Richard, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on your program, sir.
Richard, I had seen something online just recently about you and Wells Fargo, where you had been fired in July of this year for something that happened almost 50 years ago, for something really ridiculous. And then Wells Fargo had offered to hire you back in your job as a customer service representative, and you declined. Now, I want to get into great detail into that story, but before we do, for the benefit of the listeners, give them a little bit of background about who you are.
Okay, well, basically, I think I would represent a pretty standard Midwest middle-class American. I was raised on a hog and dairy farm in central Iowa, graduated from high school, put my time in the service, and got married, and then graduated from college, and pretty much kept my nose to the grindstone the rest of my life in industrial management until I wanted to get away from the stress of management and got into customer service. So in a nutshell, that's pretty much it. I was educated, and I worked all my life, and I like to look upon myself as a pretty average American.
Right. And what branch of the service were you in, sir?
Army.
And that was in, I guess, the 50s or the 60s?
It was in 65 and 66 in Vietnam.
Well, let me say this, and I myself was in the Navy, and let me say that thank you for serving, because the number of people that serve in the United States military is very small. I know nowadays it's something like 1% of the population, but I think overall throughout the history of the United States, it's been about 7% of the eligible population has served in the military. And of course, Vietnam was not a lot of fun. I'm sure you have a lot of stories to tell about that, right?
Well, it had its moments, yes.
Yeah.
But back then, when I was young, I believed that everyone owed their country a certain term of service, if not in the military, then in VISTA or the Peace Corps, but something to pay back the protection our way of life gives us.
Graduated from college, you got married, or you got married first, graduated from college. Did you have any children?
Two children. They're both about 40 years old now. Both live on the West Coast. Excellent people and excellent citizens.
Great. Let me just set the stage here a little bit for the listeners, and then please, I'm going to let you explain everything from the beginning. But something very interesting, I was doing a little research about this matter and also about Des Moines, Iowa, and I just want to read a little bit about Des Moines so people will know how it was that you worked for Wells Fargo as a customer service representative. Well, Des Moines, of course, is the capital and the most populous city in Iowa. And I'm reading this from Wikipedia online. Des Moines is a major center for the insurance industry and also has a sizable financial services and publishing business base. And it says here, in fact, Des Moines was credited with the number one spot for U.S. insurance companies in a Business Wire article.
Yes, I've heard that.
Mm-hmm. And the city is the headquarters for the principal financial group, Aviva Insurance, the Meredith Corporation, Ron Transportation, EMT Insurance Companies, and Wellmark Blue Cross Blue Shield. Other major corporations such as Wells Fargo, ING Group, Nationwide Mutual Insurance Company, Marsh, Monsanto, and Pioneer Hybrid have large operations in or near the metro area.
There is that. If you're looking for a career in customer service, there are many opportunities in Des Moines, I must say.
I never knew this. Forbes magazine ranked Des Moines as the, quote, best place for business, close quote, in 2010, and in 2011 ranked the city number one among America's best cities for young professionals.
I think Des Moines is probably a bit slow and backward for someone from the East or West Coast, but for someone that isn't looking for a tremendously challenging or dynamic career, it's a very safe and a very warm community.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, Des Moines is an important city in presidential politics because it's home to the Iowa caucuses.
Yes. Small as it is, it carries a little bit of weight in the presidential caucuses.
Do you get involved in that at all when they come to town?
No. No, I don't. I try to stay away from politics.
And politicians. Right. Let me paint the picture here. Now that the listeners know a little bit about Des Moines, which I had no idea, I'm glad I have the opportunity to speak with you about this.
Des Moines is kind of an every town, you might say. If you're going to look upon an average American community, you could scarcely find a more representative community than Des Moines, Iowa.
Right. You worked for Wells Fargo since when?
Since 2005, 7 years.
As a customer service rep?
Yes, sir.
What did your job entail?
Basically, I was what is termed a phone jockey, and when I started my shift, I would activate my computer, and I took calls all day from mortgage customers who have questions or problems with their mortgage. with their payments, with the terms of their contract, with simply changes in their address or changes in their plans, et cetera. And I would keep their contract up to date, keep their information up to date, to make what changes were necessary. And sometimes there was an opportunity to help them in small ways.
Okay. Was Wells Fargo happy with the way you did your job?
They seemed to be. I had been reviewed, of course, many times over the 7 years, and my reviews were always satisfactory. And there was never any sort of disciplinary problems or anything of that nature. I certainly wasn't their best employee, but I was a good, solid employee.
Do you live nearby to where you worked?
14 miles away.
So oh, that's not bad.
In Des Moines, that's halfway across town. It's a small town, pretty small city.
Right. But the population, I guess, of Des Moines and the surrounding areas is over 500,000, right?
And surrounding areas, right. Des Moines itself is about 250,000. And then you take in the outlying suburbs, about 500,000. So to someone on the East Coast or the West Coast, you could, so to speak, drop it in the pool and it wouldn't make a ripple. Pretty small city for the United States these days.
Right. Do you work regular morning hours?
I worked from noon to 9 o'clock in the evening.
Okay, the swing shift.
Yeah, it was a pretty standard shift with them. I just happened to be on the second shift, and they offered, of course, to let me go to first shift many times, but I was content with the late hours.
Everything's going along fine. And what happened over the summer exactly?
Well, basically, last December, we were notified, all of us were notified, that Wells Fargo would be running background checks and fingerprinting on all of us to assure that we didn't have a criminal background. And I poo-pooed that. You know, I didn't figure I had a criminal background. And they started testing and checking people in January. They didn't get around to my group until April. And we went through the background screen, the fingerprinting. And then on May 23rd, I received a correspondence from Human Resources, and they wanted to know specifically what was this business of a coin-operated machine that I had been arrested for back in 1963. And I gave them the details, the famous cardboard dime. And then on May 30th, I received a letter from the firm in Florida that was doing the testing on the background, and they notified me that I was no longer eligible to work for Wells Fargo. Well, that was May 30th, so I figured at that time, okay, I will be called in and terminated shortly. But the weeks went by, May 30th to July 12th, 6 weeks went by, and I heard nothing. I figured they had dropped it as too trivial to deal with, and then on July 12th, I was called in for a, quote, special meeting, and I knew what that entailed because I had seen other people go to their special meetings and never come back. And I was told by Human Resources and my supervisor that due to my criminal background, so to speak, I was no longer considered eligible for employment, and I was terminated at that time, turned in my security badge, and was escorted to the door. That was pretty much it.
Okay. Now for the listeners, and for me too, because this is fascinating. I was 3 years old in 1963.
Yes.
Let's go back to that day, if you remember when that happened.
The day of the crime, I remember.
When was that? What was the date of that crime?
February 2nd, 1963. I was going to college at the time. That was my first year out of high school. And I was living on my family's farm and commuting to Des Moines, going to college. And I was with a friend, a high school friend, and he was going to go down the laundry to take care of his laundry. He was going down the laundromat, so I tagged along with him, just keeping company. And after sitting around watching him wash and dry for an hour or so, I read everything there was to read in the laundromat, and I just got bored. So I cut out a couple of paper dimes out of probably detergent boxes, out of the stiff board that is in a detergent box, and plugged them into the dimes. I see it cost $1.75 now, where it was 20 cents then, so I guess that's progress. And I plugged in the two dimes and shoved them in and jammed. They just jammed themselves in there. And as soon as I plugged them in, the local sheriff walked in and placed us both under arrest. And he told us, quite gleefully, that he had been cruising by in his squad car and saw that there were two teenagers in the laundromat, so he figured there was going to be some problems, and he came up to watch us through the window. And apparently he was right, because there was a lawbreaker in there, certain enough. And he took us to the county seat, and we were booked and put in jail.
How old were you?
18.
And prior to the paper dime incident, had you ever been involved with the law?
Yes, once. When I was 16, I was apprehended on an underage drinking episode that I got 9 months probation, had to be home at 9 o'clock every night and that sort of thing. A real light tap on the wrist, but I have since called for my entire rap sheet, so to speak, from the county seat. Those are the only two things that are on it, the underage drinking and the, I think they called it criminal fraud, improper use of a coin-operated machine.
Wow.
So you might say that after that, I went straight.
Yeah, they're pretty strict there in Iowa.
It was a little town of 1,200. It's a small town in Iowa, and there's not enough crime to keep a sheriff really occupied. And he was always quite zealous in his duties and eager to administer the law, but he didn't have any lawbreakers to work with. So when he saw something out of line, he was quite delighted and threw the book as far as he could.
Yeah, I wonder if he's still alive today.
I really don't know. I have looked for his name locally and in the local rural areas. I don't see it. I would guess he would be in his 80s, probably late 80s if he's alive. He may well be retired in another state. But this was long, long ago, and he may well be deceased.
Yeah, I was just thinking if he was alive and he realized what happened with this matter, if he remembered it.
Yeah, he had to have had a pretty boring job. In all of my years in grade school, high school, etc., I've never even heard of a car being stolen in that town. I suppose it's different today. I suppose they have a little livelier criminal set than I was exposed to. But there was basically no crime at all for a zealous lawman.
They actually put you in prison for 2 days in jail?
Well, county jail. Actually, they sentenced us to 15 days in the county jail. And then after 2 days, the jailer and the sheriff and the county seat just came and told me to go ahead and go back to classes. But I didn't need to serve out my time. So they obviously didn't look upon it. I think that they were less enthused about it than our local sheriff was. Obviously, they didn't look upon it as a serious crime when you can let a kid out to go back to college.
Yeah. And where were mom and dad when you were in the clink?
Well, obviously, when we got to the county seat, I was allowed my one telephone call, and I called my folks and told them to pick up my car at the laundromat. They always had copies of my car keys and everything, and I had been arrested, and they were quite amazed. But I just told them, I don't need anything. I'm here for 15 days. I'll just stuff it out.
Did they offer to come and get you, or they just listened to what you had to say?
They offered to come and get me, yes, but I told them that, well, they came and got me, of course, when they did let me out 2 days later. But at the time I first called them, they asked me, you know, is there anything I needed? Did they need to come there to the county seat? And I told them, no, there's nothing to do. I've been booked. I'm in jail, and there's really nothing they can do for me.
Right. How were the accommodations?
Well, fine, I guess. Breakfast cereal was always a little soggy. They seemed to pour the milk on it about an hour before it got to us. Aside from that, it was just a big holding tank, and there were about a dozen guys in there, and we sat around playing cards and reading whatever little material was applied to us to read and telling each other lies, I suppose. But accommodations were adequate, I guess. It wasn't really hard time.
Now, did you say your buddy was arrested also?
Yes, and he got a much worse deal out of this than I did. Because, number one, I was the one that was playing games with the machine. And when the sheriff walked in, he arrested both of us. And then they let me out after 2 days to go back to college. And they held him for the full 15.
Why?
Yeah, well, what a ripoff for him. He was innocent, and he got the full punishment. He never held it against me or anything. He knew it was the local sheriff's doing, so to speak.
Why do you think that they did that to him, even though, I mean, the sheriff was looking right through the window. He saw that your buddy didn't do anything. Why do you think they did that to him and not you?
Sure, no, I can't begin to answer that except to say, again, that this was a very dedicated and overzealous sheriff. And when he saw a chance to make an arrest, he was delighted to make it and make it as fully as he could.
Okay.
No, logically speaking, he should have been well aware that my friend was doing nothing but folding his laundry over in a corner.
Poor guy. Amazing how things unfold the way they do.
Yes, it could have been worse, I guess. So he could have come in shooting, huh?
Yeah. This was the whole matter. There's nothing else to it. And as far as the underage drinking, I would bet that probably the vast majority of the population of underage kids in the United States drink. I know when I was 15, we started drinking in the cornfield nearby where we lived, and someone would get us a beer. And I think this is a part of growing up in the United States.
Yeah, I think that's just one of these evil temptations that every teenager succumbs to. I knew very few kids, at least boys, in my hometown that didn't try it just to see what it was like. Back then, although I suppose it's different now, but back then the girls were pretty much removed from alcohol, etc.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a lot different now. So that's the whole story. Wells Fargo found out about it. I'm sure not in that great of detail. They probably saw that there was some matter that they considered to be criminal. And of course, the reason that this is important is due to some changes in the law because of the quote-unquote financial crisis of 2007 and 2008. There were some regulations that were passed that... Why don't you explain to the listeners about them?
It was Act 12 of the FDIC's Act. It was Section 19, should I say, of FDIC's Act 12, which is a voluminous law setting regulations for the banking and financial industry. Section 19, which is the only one that's ever applied to me, basically just states that anyone with a criminal or trust background cannot be eligible to work in a financial or a banking institution unless they obtain an FDIC waiver, which in fact is almost always granted because most of these things are decades old and most of them are pretty trivial. But during the meantime, it takes about 10 to 12 months to get a waiver, and the people who are let go and who are terminated go through a lot of financial problems until they can get their jobs back.
This was in December. They started to test people. Then it was May 23rd that they notified you.
May 23rd, they asked me what were the details of this booking and this crime that I have been charged with.
Right. And then May 30th, what happened exactly on May 30th?
Okay, May 30th, I received a letter from the company in Florida that was doing the background checks for Wells
right.
Fargo. And they just stated that due to my criminal history, that I was not eligible for employment in a financial institution.
Right. And then nothing happened until July.
Nothing happened until July 12th, and by that time I figured I was home free. It never crossed my mind originally that there could possibly be anything on my record to condemn me. But
right.
even when they found out about the cardboard dime situation, I didn't think it was going to come back to haunt me.
Amazing. They let you go on July 12th. Was that in the beginning of your shift?
It was pretty close to the beginning. I think I'd been there about 2 hours at that time. It would have been about 1:30 or 2 o'clock. And my supervisor tapped me on the shoulder and just said that there's a meeting we want you to attend. And other people had been terminated in my department and in other departments near us. And it was the same format. I knew what I was getting into there. I knew that this was the termination interview.
And you said that they escorted you out of the building. Did you have a desk there that you kept stuff in?
Oh, yes. Everyone had, it was kind of the white-collar trenches situation, the normal cubicles and acres of cubicles. And I had, you know, my own individual desk and my own individual supplies, et cetera, in it, which were, of course, boxed up and sent to me.
That's what I was going to ask. So they didn't even let you clean out the desk?
No one that I have seen terminated under this Section 19 has ever been allowed to go back to their desk.
Wow.
The supervisor escorts them to the door. They're told goodbye, and then everything that belongs to them personally is boxed up and mailed to them.
Okay.
Very efficient.
They make you feel like a criminal. How did you feel exactly when this was happening?
Oh, I just amused and disgusted. It was as silly as then as it was back in 1963. It was a stupid college boy stunt, and it didn't deserve jail time in 1963, and it didn't deserve termination in 2012. I was just disgusted with them. I think the last thing I said to them in the interview was, "This is rubbish," as I walked out.
Right.
I still consider it's just rubbish. They're playing a game, in my opinion, because Wells Fargo doesn't let out a lot of information. But in my opinion, I think Wells Fargo let go of these 3,000 people simply to try to make a case with the feds that they are overregulated and to be able to say, look what we have to do to all these people because you're making us be bad.
Mm-hmm.
I would guess that's the reason to do it. I know of no other reason they would be doing it.
Unless they want to shave costs because they're afraid that the economy is going to collapse even further.
Well, they have the option, Wells Fargo has the option, I have since found, of filing these waivers for their employees themselves. And Wells Fargo could file the waivers with the FDIC. Probably 95% of all the people who were terminated for silly things like shoplifting back when they were teenagers or kiting one bad check a couple of decades ago or something, almost all of them will be waived by the FDIC. All of these people could have been kept on the payroll while Wells Fargo filed for the exemptions. I think Wells Fargo deliberately let all these people go to try to make a case that they are overregulated and they are forced to do bad things.
Well, that makes sense. And obviously, you've had a lot of time to think about this. And
yes.
You've done a lot of research. You left. You came home. Is your wife still living?
Yes. She worked. And I called her and told her that I was terminated. Actually, I did a lot of calling that afternoon. I know I called the attorney, who I am still retaining. I called the unemployment department of the state of Iowa to file for unemployment benefits. I called Social Security. I hadn't wanted to file for Social Security until I was 70 and could get full benefits, but I knew I was going to have to do it now.
Right.
And I started my Social Security benefits 2 years early. Basically, I called everyone that I could see was going to be involved in this in the future.
What did your wife think when you told her?
Well, she was about the same as me, amused and disgusted. I don't think at that point she'd ever heard of this dopey little episode. I don't think I'd ever indicated it to her in the past. I always looked upon it as so trivial that it wasn't even anything I ever brought up with her.
Right.
She was just disgusted, I guess.
It is disgusting. What was the next significant thing that happened after July 12th of this year?
I called the FDIC that day also, and they sent me a waiver package, which is very impressive. It's a voluminous book that goes into your background, your current economic status and financial status, your financial history, your work history, on and on and on. It takes quite a bit to fill it out, but the attorney that I retained filed a lawsuit with Wells Fargo, both for my return to Wells Fargo and the return of others in the local area here that he is working with as part of a class action suit to be returned to Wells Fargo's employment. And then I think it was in mid-August, I received the package from the FDIC, filled it out, returned it to them, and they apparently moved it through their system faster than anyone had ever heard of it going through the system. Normally it takes 10 to 12 months, as I stated. Mine was back within a month, but they had waived the termination that I was eligible to be rehired by Wells Fargo.
Okay, so this was in September of this year, approximately?
This was in September, yes.
So the FDIC gets back to you. I guess they probably saw the media coverage of this disaster, and they realized that the publicity would be pretty bad in light of how Wall Street executives themselves have literally stolen trillions of dollars out of our pockets.
Wells Fargo regularly gets caught skating on the edge of the law, and then they shell out a few hundred million and go back to work, but they're always pushing the limits of the law, discrimination laws and mortgage laws, things of that nature. They never seem to quite clean up their act, but they're apparently always willing to pay the fines.
You know what they say, that's the cost of doing business.
Quite so. They have deep pockets, and they have to reach deep on some of these fines. And as you say, that's simply a part of doing business in our financial world today.
What was the next significant thing that happened after you got that back?
Well, I think the most important thing that happened was that I started thinking that why me? Why? Because I have received a lot of media attention, I've received a lot of publicity, now I'm suddenly going to be offered my job back. But how about the other 3,000 people who were let go? And probably a lot of them have worse financial situations than I do. A lot of them are raising children. A lot of them are trying to put themselves through school by working. I'm sure a lot of them have had problems with their credit since they've been terminated. And how does it happen that just because I have been in the news and my name and face have been on the news, I get special treatment like this? And I just felt that there was a right that was being violated here, that Wells Fargo could offer all of these people back their jobs if they wanted to. If they can ram through one waiver in a month, they can ram them all through in a month. It just kind of stuck in my craw that I was getting special treatment here that I didn't deserve. I hadn't done anything except manage to get fired. Same thing all the other 3,000 people did. So why should I be the one that's allowed to go back to work? So I decided I'm not going to go back to work until Wells Fargo can show justice to the other 3,000 people as well as me.
That's very honorable. Very few people would do that, I think.
It is going to cost me some money, and it has already cost me some money, but I guess I've had some long talks with myself, and I don't think I would feel good knowing that all of this publicity, all this media attention just resulted in one person getting their job back. It was a waste of time and effort. There's something wrong with Wells Fargo's system, and that needs corrected, not just one person put back to work.
When the FDIC in September said, okay, you're cleared, you can go back to work, what was the reason for the delay from September till October?
Okay, that I can't really answer. My attorney has requested that I, you know, make no statements to the press, that he will make all statements to the press, and he didn't want to make this public. I had spoken with Wells Fargo early in October, and, you know, they had told me that my job was secure, that they were not putting anyone else back to work, et cetera, and I passed that on to my attorney. And he felt that he didn't want to pass that on to the press at this time, and I can't really answer why at this time.
Oh, that's fine. I was just wondering about the month or month and a half discrepancy in time.
You know, I'm the ultimate layman in terms of legal, and I'm quite willing to allow my attorney to make these decisions. I'm sure he knows more about it than I ever will.
Sure. Right now, as it stands, is that you rejected the job going back to work, and there's not a class action lawsuit, but the attorney is trying to get class action status for this. Is that right?
He does have a class action lawsuit that he has filed against Wells Fargo, and I know that he has sent them 3 notices that he requests them to adjust their termination policies so that these people are not left out on the street. Insofar as I know, he is not getting any sort of answer from Wells Fargo, nor would I expect him to. I don't think any corporation or company would adjust their policies based upon a lawyer telling them to do so.
Right. I thought that in class action lawsuits, the judge has to approve it first.
Okay, that I can't answer. I'm not
okay.
Familiar with the law. That's where it sits. And eventually, I presume that my attorney is going to actually file a suit and demand a court hearing on this to represent me and the other clients, getting our jobs back under the conditions that he is requesting. That is, Wells Fargo changed their termination policies. Basically, what he wants them to do is to hold the people on the payroll while they file the FDIC waiver request. There's no reason to let the people go out on the street if most of these waiver requests are going to be asked anyway.
Right.
I think that's a major thing he's looking for.
Mm-hmm. And right now, you're not employed.
I am not employed. And of course, I've lost my unemployment benefit since I have turned down employment.
Mm-hmm. So how are things? Kind of tight?
Yeah, they're tight. Tighter than they were, yes.
I'm sorry to hear that.
As I say, I'm not too happy with any of this situation. It's not going to be a major sacrifice. I'm not going to wind up living under a bridge or anything. But there's some sacrifice involved. But I think I'll rest easy knowing that I'm not taking special advantages.
Richard Eggers, I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to the listeners. And looking forward to talking to you in the future as the case unfolds. I hope we can have you back to get updates on the case.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you.